Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
We witches too don't quite know what to do as we gather round the cauldron in this late night forest. And before we can go out to do our witchy things, we don our smocks and put on the traditional hat, a helmet with two beer cans, and a tube going from each one and into our mouths. The spookiest hat of them all, the double beer hat.
There's so many things wrong with that. I knew it was going downhill when you hit the smocks thing, which is a smock.
It's like an elaborate smock.
I don't think it's more of a dress or garment or an outfit. A smock is for painting. It's for painting.
I've been cultivating a more artistic witchery, if nothing else.
Sure, nothing more artistic than wearing two beer cans on your head, right, Justin?
Hey, business in the smock and party on the head, is what I
party
say.
On the top. That's what I always say. And the other thing that I always say is, welcome to the Chilling Podcast of Sabrina. We're going to be talking about Part 3, Chapter 23, Heavy is the Crown. Ooh, boy. Lots of stuff to talk about with this episode,
much.
Justin.
And that's why Heavy is the Crown is what I was inspired with the beer can
okay.
hat.
Okay.
It's a heavy hat.
Yeah, it is. Well, it gets less heavy, lighter even. Over time.
Exactly. That's what I say when people are like, shouldn't you stop drinking? I'm like, I'm just lightening the load on my head.
Dragging my brains down.
Just giving my neck a break.
All right. Before we get into it, let's do a brief bit of recap here about what's happened so far on Part 3 of Chilling Adventures of Sabrina on Netflix. So after putting the spirit of Lucifer, her daddy, in the body of evil Father Blackwood, who doesn't really show up this episode, Sabrina Spellman's boyfriend Nick Scratch is free and easy and back in Greendale,
yes,
where it's always Halloween.
Free to be bad, the bad boy that he's always been.
Exactly. And boy, does he go real bad this episode. Actually, he does, I think, maybe for the first time.
Yeah.
We'll get to that in a moment. But there is a catch, which is that Sabrina has agreed to be the Queen of Hell in exchange for Nick's soul being returned to Greendale. Lilith, who is still walking around in the guise of Sabrina's fave teacher, Miss Wardwell, who is herself back in Greendale and very confused, is working as Sabrina's right-hand woman. Unfortunately for all of them, Hell hates Sabrina. And the Lords of Hell are backing a sexy clay man, which is different than the yes. artist clay man, who is also pretty sexy.
Very sexy.
That man, though, is named Caliban, and he has gone off to gather signatures to challenge Sabrina's rule.
At the badass same time, move, bureaucratically yes. endorsing his right to the crown.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, when I'm walking along on the streets of New York and I see somebody with a clipboard, I'm like, yo, you are a badass. And they're like, great, want to sign? And I'm like, I'm very busy.
Yeah, good. It is, I mean, it does seem kind of lame that is like this infernal plot. But the whole thing with the devil is like, sign this contract. So yeah. Like, there's a big precedent for the infernal paperwork.
Oh, absolutely. Fire and paper don't mix in real life, but that's part of the magic of the show.
No.
So back on Earth at the same time, the Church of Night has been decimated and Sabrina's aunts, Zelda and Hilda, are attempting to rebuild the coven in their old school. It's had a couple of hiccups, including a visit from other coven leaders who very casually mentioned they're starting to lose the potency of their spells. We moved on from that, but that's something we returned to in a big way this episode. So hold on to that info. And also important to mention, Hilda has been dating Gaeta from Battlestar Galactica.
Yes, same character.
Same character. We haven't seen him this season. He confusingly has two legs, so I have to assume this is a prequel to Battlestar.
I want to think it's a sequel, and the Cylons took over, as we saw sort of that being gestured toward, and have been living on Earth for centuries.
All this has happened before, and all this will happen again.
You get it.
Yep. Meanwhile, in Sabrina's human school, Roz and Hardy have been dating Harvey.
They go to exclusively to Hardy's restaurant, though. Product tie-in.
Yeah, it was a weird line when Roz says, "I'm no Carl's Jr. woman.
Yeah,
take
exactly.
me to Hardy's." Anyway, Roz and Harvey Kinkle have been dating. Roz has been getting into cheerleading along with Sabrina. And Theo has developed a crush on a new kid named Robin, who is played by Jonathan Whitesell, a.k.a. Kurtz from Riverdale. So, you know, you can definitely trust him as we go into this episode.
Mm.
Last few details. Sabrina has a cousin named Ambrose, who is good at researching things. A frenemy named Prudence, who is part of the Church of Night. And Riverdale is a town next door to Greendale.
Why would you say that? Why would you mention that?
That's Riverdale? Yeah. Well, I think it's important, as we always start every episode with a geography lesson. Yep. I'm just mentioning that Riverdale is next door, and it's perfectly normal in every single way.
100%.
Yeah, just a cool town where people are dating each other and getting into hijinks.
Nah, fun stuff. Just like, which milkshake are we going to order?
That's the big conflict over on the main show, Riverdale. All right, let's get into it. It was the first one. It was the first one in the extended Archieverse.
Yep.
No ever judgment. Expanding. Let's jump into it because lots of plot to cover here. We open on Roz and Harvey. They're watching a scary movie. I think it was Them or something like that.
I think that's correct.
Yeah. And as usual, as you always do on a date, they're watching it with Harvey's dad, who goes up to Harvey and warns him to use protection. And Harvey's like, "Dad, leave me alone.
Dad, you might be under a spell that makes you not drink as much. Just FYI."
Yeah, that was a weird detail I was reminded of during that scene. I was like, why is he being so nice? Oh, right. That happened.
Yeah. But I guess, I mean, I think that's good. And Harvey's dad seems like better. Mm-hmm. And we do see him later in the episode, perhaps finding another thing to become addicted to, snake charming. Mm-hmm. so I think it's Sabina better have another spell ready for him.
Yeah, that's, what is that, the fourth or the fifth of the 12 steps is after you're getting over alcohol, snake charming?
Yeah, that's definitely, when they go through the steps, the fourth one, they just shout, snakes!
And anybody who runs away is no longer an alcoholic. This is that's very demeaning to alcoholics. I'm not going to follow this bit anymore.
Wow, okay.
So he sets that up. The other thing that was funny to me about this plot line with Roz and Harvey, with them being like, should we go all the way? And the fact that Nick and Sabrina kind of touch on that as well is, I forget, given how sexually free the witch community is and has been established to be, that these are still teenagers and it isn't Riverdaling it up where everybody's boning all over the place.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all.
No, I think it is. It's sort of sweet. I think it has a very specific plot reason, as we sort of gets touched on at the end of the episode. I think that gives it a little bit of grounding, especially now that this season, all of the characters are doing legit too many things.
Yes.
That they do have something where it's like, oh, that is a normal thing to be going through, being nervous about having sex for the first time or not knowing quite how to ask somebody out. Like, all those things are great. Especially compared to the line that Roz says, which is like, hey, that fucked up carnival that will surely be our downfall opens tomorrow. Should we head there?
Yeah. Nothing bad ever happens in Greendale. Let's go to the dilapidated carnival in the middle of the woods. That sounds fun.
They've been setting it up for weeks.
Also, fun little thing, and we'll get to more connections as we move through, but the Carcosa Carnival that showed up here was actually teased back in, I think it was the in-treatment episode of Riverdale, right at the beginning when those evil videotapes are being delivered. FP picks up a newspaper that is holding one of the videotapes in that episode, and it says, Carcosa Carnival, it says Carcosa Carnival coming to, it looked like Riverdale, though that part is faded out. So I don't know if that means like we're going to get a legit crossover of the carnival going to both towns, or they were just teasing it because they were filming Sabrina at the same time and they wanted to have a fun thing, but fun little detail there.
I would think it's a slight detail, though I will say this episode proves that they are going to really tease us about crossing over without ever giving us sort of the payoff.
Yeah. They have to eventually, though, right?
I would think. Unless they're being truly cruel about it.
Yes. Well, I think it comes down to schedules and it comes down to timing and the shows. And Sabrina, despite the fact that it's been on, feels like it's been on forever, it's really only had a season and a half. I'm very happy Pete's here, so we could just kind of move past the discussion. But
yes,
it's a young show, and I think they do want to give it time to develop before, like, they have Jughead hang out with the Greendale gang or something like that.
Yeah, and unlike, like, say, Katie Keene in Riverdale, where there's sort of a shared reality, mm-hmm. it's sort of a riskier crossover because magic doesn't exist so far in Riverdale. And in Sabrina, it's, like, all about that. Mm-hmm. So it feels like it has a potential to do some damage to some of the worlds that they've established with each separate show. So it needs to be handled with care, which I think they do well here.
Yeah, the stuff that happens in this episode, this is very much jumping ahead, but the stuff that happens in this episode, like most of the things where they touch on Riverdale, feels to me the same way when Riverdale touches on Greendale, where they'll drive past or drive through and be like, ooh, this is a creepy town, even creepier than Riverdale. Well, anyway, moving on with the rest of the plot.
Yeah. Yeah, and I do think that it feels like the crossover is something you do, like, to kick off, you tape it like at the very end of a season or at the beginning of the next season and mm-hmm. hold it for just the right moment to release for everyone.
Yeah.
Or what a great, treating it like British television's Christmas special. Like, that would be super fun.
That would be fun. I think what they talked about originally, this is Roberto Gerascasa talked about it, that he would love to do an Afterlife with Archie movie. And to me, that would be the perfect way of doing it. Do it almost out of continuity with both shows.
Yeah.
And legit just have the two casts come together, kill them all off with zombies, and just have a fun time.
That would be a blast. I hope they do that.
Me too.
Especially Sabrina Archie's sort of dating in the comics still.
There you go. Move over Nick and Sabrina, which is the next thing we get to, because they are in bed. They're staring at each other. Sabrina is just happy that Nick is back from hell. But Nick is messed up, which is the big thing that he's dealing with this episode. He thinks the Dark Lord is still there. Turns out he's got a real messed up club foot going on.
Yeah. Always keep your eye on your feet, because that's where the devil gets in.
Mm-hmm. The devil, hell is below us, so he likes to creep in from the bottom to the top.
Exactly. That's why I always really tippy-toe my way past graveyards.
This is why I don't worry about wearing hats, because that's how the angels get in.
Yeah, that's nice. You're always exposing your head.
But yeah, Nick is really trying to take care of that foot. He's playing off to Sabrina like he's fine, but he's scrubbing his foot hard in the shower. He's imagining that he's still in that wrestling match that he was having with Lucifer in his own head. And meanwhile, downstairs, finally back to the actual classic Spellman breakfast situation.
Yeah.
Zelda reading the newspaper, her face hidden. Hilda's making way too much food. Zelda has a great line there where she's still pissed at Sabrina for taking over as Queen of Hell. And she says, first purgatory, then hell. What's next? Heaven?
Now that to me feels like a teaser for where we're headed at the end of the season.
100%. You don't throw a line like that in without following up on it. It's ridiculous. But then I can follow it up with the Zelda's big plot line. And I do love how this episode, like, sets up everybody's plot lines right at the beginning, and things don't come together at the end, but they really pay off nicely by the end. Zelda sneezes and plays it off. She's like, oh, I'm just sneezing, it's no big deal. But clearly, as we find out later on, it does become a much bigger deal.
Yeah.
And Zelda tells Nick and Sabrina to go to school. Sabrina crosses her fingers behind Nick's back.
Very sweet little spell. In the midst of all this craziness, she still has to cross her fingers when she tells a lie. Very mm-hmm. sweet.
Yes. Very cute. I feel like Hilda and Zelda should be able to see that with witch powers, but I guess not. And then as they're walking outside, Lilith shows up. They're not going to have a skip day. Sabrina is not going to take Nick out all day. Instead, Lilith says, the Lords of Hell are flipping out, and she has to come to Hell, and Sabrina reveals this to Nick, and he's pretty pissed off.
Yeah. Yeah, this episode was, they've just gotten back together, and this episode was about sort of Nick and Sabrina sort of splitting them apart in a lot of ways, through Nick's internal, like, PTSD or maybe, like, residual possession, and Sabrina just being too busy, like, homework. Hell is her homework, and she treats it like, ugh, I gotta go finish this essay.
Right.
When she's ruling the dead, basically.
Yeah, and she's done no work. She just keeps walking into hell and making these declarations without backing anything up, which, mind you, classic Sabrina, she does that all the time everywhere. But you feel like ruling the entire underworld, you might put a couple of hours into doing some reading or something.
Take your responsibility seriously. This is not going to look good on a college application if you did a bad job ruling hell.
Yeah. What is an interviewer going to think? You're not getting into Columbia. You're not going to school with Veronica Luna. That's just not going to happen.
That's 100% right. Hell is, unless there's a hell university that you could, because I feel like she's a shoe in there.
HU, the Fighting Devils.
Oh, yeah. Really good. Oh, I guess Duke is hell university on Earth.
Yes, much apologies to anybody who went to Duke, but I'm sorry. It's true.
I'm saying that because I'm a Syracuse basketball fan, so in your face.
Oh, okay, you lost me. All right, so Sabrina is down in hell. The Lords of Hell are yelling at Sabrina. She starts making these declarations, which is after her experiences last episode with the evil ice cream man who extended his life 7 years every time he killed a child. She says, no more contracts. We're putting a freeze on contracts until we figure this out. And classic, like, just dictator behavior.
Yeah.
Everybody's pretty pissed of it. Caliban comes in, though. He's gotten the 666 signatures that are required to challenge Sabrina for the throne. And the challenge is a quest for the unholy regalia.
Yeah.
There are three items in the unholy regalia. We'll get to what the first one is in a second. And they need to find the three of them. And then not even Lucifer Morningstar himself can keep the throne if somebody else finds these regalia and completes the challenge. And there's two funny items of business. We find out the first item is King Herod's crown. That's the first item they're going to have to find. Nobody knows where they are, Lilith specifies. And they're like, how are we going to do this? What's going to go on with this challenge? And Lilith's like, it'll probably end up being best 2 out of 3.
That was very funny.
Again, is like, you're just feeding us the plot here. This is exactly what's going to happen.
And like, honestly, I was like, what is that? What could that? How else could it ever possibly go?
Right.
So that was very funny.
But another to funny. Well, I was just going to add, I think that points to the intelligence of the show is they know we know going in that Sabrina's going to get one, Caliban's going to get one, and then it's going to be a tiebreaker. Yes. So why play around about it?
That's good. Yeah, get right to the point. Another funny moment here is that the demons have been spying on Sabrina's cheerleading, which I thought is sort of a come down for a demon. If your demon job is like, hey, go watch this cheerleading practice and see what the queen's up to. There's other cooler. Surely these demons throughout all of their immortal, monstrous times have done other cooler things.
Well, it's the same thing as like Sabrina's job. We were talking about this in the last episode, me and Pete, but Sabrina's main job, the way they describe it, is dragging souls to hell. And she gets 2 souls in in Greendale, and that's it. And she's done. It feels like there should be a lot of other stuff going on elsewhere in the world. And obviously that's one of the artifices of doing a TV show like this. You can't have her being like, well, I'm going to drag 1,000 souls to hell. But at the same time, I don't know. It feels like other things should be going on in other places, I guess.
Oh, you want her to be dealing with some sort of Hawaiian crisis?
Yes.
Or a trip to Paraguay?
I will say I would love to see a spinoff movie called Sabrina's Hawaiian Crisis.
No, that's good. The break is not big enough for our surf competition.
Challenging a demon to a surf competition, that would be amazing.
Yes.
A luau, that could get fiery. A lot of stuff could go on.
Hawaii has a lot of hell qualities, except it's paradise.
Yes. It's hot, though. Hell is also hot.
Great point.
All right. So very briefly, back at the witchy school, we find out Prudence is going to become prefect, and then the shit hits the fan, so to speak. Gerald is the student, is trying to fly, but he doesn't have the power to fly, so he just jumped off of a balcony. He dies. Elspeth sneezes, and Zelda realizes everything's gone wrong, but she gives everybody a pep talk. And they very quickly, I think we can follow this plot line through, right?
Yeah, let's do it.
So Zelda gives them a pep talk, but very quickly realizes that, what those other lords were talking about with them losing their potency, that's clearly happening to them.
I found it interesting she's dressing like Father Blackwood. Is that like an official uniform, or is she just... Is she trying to, like, be in his rule in his image a little bit? Why isn't she bringing her own style to the job?
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't even notice that outfit change necessarily.
Big
puffy shirt. It might... I would assume it's because that's the authority figure thing, right?
Puffy shirts mean authority?
Yeah, puffy shirts.
Wow, then I am a king.
Yeah, you saw... That's classic Seinfeld episode where they're like, well, now you run a witchy school. And they're like, a witchy school? And then Kramer came and was like, witch school? Did somebody say something about witch school? And then Elaine said, get out. Yeah, it was a good show overall. So Zelda gives that pep talk. We get a bizarre, I loved it, but totally bizarre sidebar that maybe I missed it, but felt built up out of nowhere, where Zelda's teaching class... Students, she's like, wow, you're all really into the reading today. And the students are like, no, we're reading a book called Buxom and the Beast, written by Helga Stillwell. And Hilda, then it cuts to Hilda is reading it to the rest of the students as a bedtime story, an erotic novel that she wrote under a pen name. And Zelda's pissed off because she realizes, of course, it's written by Hilda. It's kind of slagging off Zelda a little bit. And Hilda lashes out back at her and says, this is your dream. You wanted to be headmistress. I want to do something else with my life. I'm going to go to the carnival with Dr. C. It's weird she calls him that when his name is Gato from Battlestar Galactica.
Yes.
But then Zelda erases the book. Before we move on with the rest of this, what did you think about this whole erotic novella?
I agree. It was very weird. I mean, I think the justification was, you told me to distract the kids because of the sickness going around. So I wrote a romance novel, like an erotic romance novel. So it's a pretty weird justification. And the whole thing especially the way they just all the kids put their books down and they're all reading it. The whole thing felt like, what is this? Where? But I thought it was fun. I liked it.
Oh, it's great. I hope we see more of it. I hope we see her continuing to follow along writing erotic novellas and everything, because that's a ridiculous fun storyline. But it felt like it mostly was there to set up friction between Zelda and Hilda and ultimately set up the little extra scene that we get, because I don't think we go back to the witch school at all this episode.
No.
After that.
No more Zelda. We do get this great little moment where Hilda and Gaeta are walking around and he proposes.
Yes, super sweet. He also, for the second episode in a row, we get one of their, last episode we got Zelda's full name. This episode we get Hilda's full name, which is Hildegard Antoinette Spellman, which I don't think we've heard before, but good name. And she says yes. And so now they're getting married. Very sweet.
Yeah, this feels like it's going to be an interesting, it's going to break up the fam, potentially.
Yeah.
Do you think it's going to work out, or do you think Gaeta's days are numbered now?
Nah, Gaeta's too nice. He's great, and Hilda's too nice. I think, I don't know, the arc, if I remember correctly, the arc of part one and the arc of part two are always about causing friction in the Spellman family and then ultimately realizing we need to get back together and all work together. And that's what this feels like to me here, because you can't have Zelda and Hilda go separate ways.
Uh-huh. Yes, definitely. But what happens? Does Gaeta move into the house?
Throuple, man. Throuple.
I guess that's true. Yeah.
Just like on Battlestar Galactica. I haven't watched it in a while, but I assume that's what happens.
Yeah, it was an erotic series on Showtime, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
That's what my memory of it is.
Yeah. So let's jump over to another side storyline that happens here. We follow Miss Wardwell a little bit this episode. Yes. Now, Miss Wardwell, we've seen only little blips of her before. It's mostly focused on Lilith. Michelle Gomez, of course, is playing both of them. But Miss Wardwell has been very confused and dealing with a lot of lost time for while Lilith was in the guise of Miss Wardwell. So... she finds out about the carnival. She remembers that she and Adam, who was her fiance, who we thought was evil, and we were totally off about, he got killed by the Dark Lord and served to Lilith. She remembers that she and Adam used to go to carnivals, so she heads to the carnival by herself, and there she finds, I'm just skipping through my notes here.
She gets the tarot reading.
Yes, she gets the palm reading.
Palm reading, yep.
And there's a couple of interesting things that happen here that I think mostly are throw her for a loop. She's told that Adam is definitely gone, though the palm reader says, yes, of course, you knew that. And also says, you know, because you were there. And it seems like there's two pieces of information happening on Miss Wardwell's palm, at least the way the palm reader reads it. And then Miss Wardwell runs out. And then later on, she finds Adam's ring and says, what happened to you, Adam? So yeah. What's your speculation here? What do you take away from this storyline, Justin?
Well, it's interesting because this isn't a show about, like, keeping secrets from people. If there's a secret kept from anyone, it comes out almost instantly.
Yeah.
So the fact that Miss Wardwell is going to, I feel like, is going to find out what happened to Adam and that she was possessed and all that, that feels like, oh, that's an interesting subplot, but I don't know what the consequences for anyone.
Right.
For that action. Like, everyone knows everything pretty much about everyone and knows how much hell fighting is going on in Greendale. So what does it matter for Miss Wardwell?
It does feel like, I don't know if this is specifically the thing, but it does feel like if you don't have Mary Wardwell and Lilith come face to face at some point, that's a missed opportunity, right?
Yes, definitely. But are we going to get Lilith again taking the role of Miss Wardwell when she's confronted? Or, like, I could imagine, like, a switching places scenario where Miss Wardwell goes to hell and Lilith hides out back at the school.
Oh, classic country mouse, city mouse type situation?
Yeah. Where I grew up, we called it country mouse in hell.
Oh, okay, hell mouse.
Yeah, because in the country, we didn't really like the city, so it was like, don't go to that hell place. So it was mouse in hell. I think that could be fun. But I don't know. It does feel a little like it's sort of exciting because it's one of the ongoing storylines that I'm curious about and I don't know where it's going to go.
But I do think you're right that usually on most of the Archieverse shows, if they set up something, it gets paid off almost immediately. So it is interesting to have these running storylines. And that actually touches on something that I was curious to get your opinion on because you mentioned this earlier. You mentioned earlier that you felt like this episode in particular, everybody's juggling a whole ton of stuff. Do you feel like it's too much at this point or is it still kind of walking that line, walking that balance?
I think it does. The show does a great job of walking it, and they make Sabrina's juggling the most, and is obviously the main character. They make her sort of like wink at it a lot, and be sort of like, "Ugh, yes, I have to go do this other thing." And it's played off as a little bit of a joke, while at the same time they're able to use all of these different situations in the plot. Like we get to see the stuff going on at Baxter High, stuff at the Infernal Academy, stuff in hell, stuff at home, cheerleading practice. Like, we get all these fun locations, and it doesn't seem like too much because Sabrina isn't – it doesn't feel like too much to her, even though it clearly is going to be.
Yeah, it is – for me, it falls on the right side of the line as well, where it is mind-boggling how many things they put into each episode, but it's still – it leaves you feeling stuffed. It doesn't feel confusing at any point. It doesn't go too far. It doesn't even hit necessarily we talk about this a lot, but it doesn't necessarily go with the Riverdale thing where it feels like sometimes plot lines are brought up and then resolved in the same scene.
Yeah.
It is more evenly paced out over the course of the episode. And so far what this part is doing is it is putting a lot more ongoing plots that aren't just episode plots, though there are individual things that seem to happen in each episode. But it does have these ongoing things like Miss Wardwell, like whatever's going on at which school with the sickness that it's setting up, that it's paying off. And that's great. It's a lot of stuff going on, but it's all fun.
Yeah, definitely. And it even like a moment that I was where they sort of wink at it. It was sort of where we were with the Sabrina story, where she catches up with all the her human friends, and we realize that all of the things that have happened in this episode so far happened before lunch, because they're like, let's eat. It's like, what? What has happened in an hour? And it's fun.
Yeah. Days are just packed, as they say in Calvin and Hobbes. So let's talk about the human school, folks, because a couple of things are going on with them. Main thrust of the plotline for Theo this episode. Theo likes Robin, the new student that we mentioned in the recap. That got set up the last episode. They went on a little bit of a date to the pep rally. And this episode, Theo wants to ask Robin to the carnival and talks to Harvey. And I really like this scene. I think Harvey is developing really nicely in this part. He feels now that he's dating Roz, now that he's freed from the angst over, I don't know that Sabrina is a witch / I found out Sabrina is a witch and I don't know how to deal with it. Ross Lidge's performance just seems a lot lighter and more fun.
Yeah.
Right now. So having him and Theo talk and Harvey saying, hey, what if we go as a group thing and then we'll kind of, you know, split off and just sort of leave you there. How does that work? Very cute.
Very cute. And at the same time, he's like, oh, let me help you with what you're dealing with and then tell you about what I'm dealing with. Like, it feels like a genuine friendship. Mm-hmm. When the show started, it felt like Harvey was going through his things and Theo and Roz were there to like sort of just keep that their story going on the right track. And now it feels like genuine ensemble friendship going on here.
Yeah, it's great. Harvey also has his own plot line going on where he's nervous because, as we established at the beginning, Roz, he thinks, wants to go all the way tonight. He's not quite sure he does. And just to keep touching on their plot lines, because there's one more scene with Theo I think we could talk about. At the carnival, Theo is there with Robin. They get stuck on the Ferris wheel. And there's, again,
a classic thing to have happen.
Oh, my gosh. They just do that. The Ferris wheel operators, they do that because they know.
It doesn't get stuck?
They know. They
I think it's a romantic – it's a sign from, like, the romance gods that, like, oh, this is a cute little moment. You think those carnies are just doing that on purpose because they're regular scumbags?
They're regular scumbags who like to creep on teen smooching. That's what I'm telling you.
Wow. What a takedown of the carny industry.
Mm-hmm. So Theo kind of stumbles and stammers and tries to tell Robin that he wasn't born Theo. And Robin says, it doesn't matter. I like Theo. And then they kiss on the Ferris wheel and it's very sweet. But you could already feel kind of nervous about everything that's going on because, well, actually, let me ask you, other than him playing Kurtz on Riverdale, were you suspicious of Robin or how did you feel about this whole thing?
No, obviously there's a reveal later on, but like, I thought this was just a sweet moment. I thought Robin was a sort of like, he's a good character. He feels like a character that stepped out of Stranger Things or something like that. So I really was like, oh, this is great. I love the way this is being handled. I'm curious to see how this Theo having a romantic relationship and like sort of tiptoeing through that will affect everyone else who's a little like dealing with the same things but a little more like Sabrina's like clearly more experienced in that department. So I thought it was going to be a cool like subplot throughout the story, but now we learn it's just not a bummer, sort of a bummer.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a bummer, and I'm concerned about what it is going to mean for Theo going forward. Jumping over to Harvey and Roz, though. So Harvey, after his conversation with Theo, walks over and finds Roz is chatting with the cheerleaders and the jocks and having a great time. And she says she's going with friends, which confuses and upsets Harvey. He says, wait, I thought we were more than friends. And she says, yeah, but we're going with a group of friends, right? So there's nothing to be upset about.
Not great here.
Not great.
Especially when like the guy that is set up as his rival is like not interesting.
Right.
He's like, what I'm scared of? Clowns. Can you imagine? It was just like, what is this?
I don't know why. I think it comes down to just Harvey. I feel like the excuse is Harvey is a dumb, sweet guy. He's nervous about having sex with her for the first time. And so he's almost like pushing hard to find something wrong in the relationship because his whole interpretation of the conversation that goes on is crazy.
Like, yes. I think it's interesting you're saying like Harvey's dumb. So, of course, the main threat to his relationship is someone even dumber, which is this guy is.
Then they go to the carnival, and he tries to do the strongman thing, barely does it. The dude who's scared of clowns comes up and aces that strongman thing.
Yeah.
They show up there. We're jumping ahead a little bit, but Nick shows up with Sabrina. Classic Harvey and Nick butting heads here. Nick is just like needling at Harvey.
Yo, he's on edge at that. Yes. Nick is really not feeling it.
Well, do you get from the scene, and we'll get back to Nick's storyline a little bit, but from the scene, something we've been talking about a lot, do you get a sense that Harvey still has feelings for Sabrina, or is he past that? Is this just about Nick?
I mean, to me, this was just about Nick. And I know in the first episode, like, I was the one trumpeting, like, it really feels like they've moved past Harvey's feelings for her. I mean, both Harvey and Sabrina seem to have moved past their feelings for each other. And then in this scene, I read it as he was like, oh, hey, Nick, can we move past that fight and just be friends? And Nick's like, fuck no, I don't like you.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think we'll see as it goes forward, because obviously a lot of stuff is going on with Nick.
Because you believe that there's still feelings there.
I think there's still feelings there. I think I know from experience from other podcasts we've done that I am consistently wrong about this sort of thing.
Yeah.
Particularly because I do like Harvey and Roz together so much. But it feels like it got a loop back to the Harvey-Sabrina thing at some point.
I think I agree at some point, but I don't. This season feels like it's not about that. And maybe that'll be like a last episode little reveal, like Harvey confesses he still loves her or something, and that's a bit of a cliffhanger. But I don't think we're going to get an ongoing return to the love triangle, love rhombus situation.
All right, we'll see what happens. Things do get a little complicated for Harvey. As you mentioned, he peeks his head in a tent and sees a sensual snake dance is going on. All the men in there, and it's only men, are mesmerized, rocking back and forth, including Harvey's dad. But Harvey, not completely entranced by the snake woman. He gets out. Roz grabs him, and they leave right as shit is about to go down. And that's kind of where we leave their storyline for the episode, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think Harvey's innocence keeps him from being fully tempted by the snake charmer. Mm-hmm. But I thought the scene was cool. It was like a little bit off-putting and sort of like, what is this about? And then we leave it. So it's setting up what we touch on at the end of the episode, that like this circus is a fucked up circus and it's here to ruin the town. And here's just one way that they're doing that, by sort of sirening all of the men in town with snakes. Mm-hmm. Snakes.
So let's see. Let's jump back a little bit and go to the main thrust of the plot. Sabrina got that quest to find Herod's crown. She goes up to Ambrose, and who's just hanging out in the library now, just chilling, having a good time after his quest to kill Father Blackwood. And Sabrina says, I'm going to try to find one of the unholy relics. And Ambrose is like, I can't review that. Can't refuse that. Sorry. I'm all in. Let's do it. And I love this. I love, like, it almost feels like the first two episodes were of a piece of each other, and now we're getting into the main thrust of the season. It's back to status quo in terms of the relationships, with some set shakeups. And for Ambrose, Sabrina, that's like, Ambrose is their researcher. I think that's nice. I like it in that
position.
They're
Giles?
They're Giles, yes. Exactly. Aha.
I can't believe I thought of that.
So meanwhile, Sabrina and Nick get lunch, and this is where I can't believe they held back. We finally get the star of the show shows up. She took her damn time. Dorcas shows up, also with Agatha, her other sister.
Well, let's just be a little bit clear here. Agatha shows up and they just cut, and Dorcas is suddenly there. Like, there's no fanfare. It's just like, oh, she's here too.
Do you think originally in the cut they felt like they had a fanfare in the score, and then they cut it out because, like, everybody knows this is a big deal. Dorcas finally showed up.
Yeah, they definitely cut the Dorcas walk-in number, the song and dance number where Dorcas just arrives places.
Now, I don't want to spend too much time on this because I don't know if you know, you weren't on the last episode, but Pete and I have our own podcast called Dorcas Dish that we run. It's mostly about Chilling Adventures of Dorcas, and of course we'll get more into that. You can subscribe now on, well, there's not like an app you could subscribe on. It's mostly Pete and I on the corner. We have a cardboard box where we tape.
Oh yeah, and I feel bad about missing out on this, what, 20 to 30 second podcast? Is that how long it takes to describe what Dorcas is going through?
It sometimes stretches to 45 seconds or a minute. Come on now.
The Dorcas Minute. Ooh, that's fun.
That would be fun. It's called Dorkish Dish, though. So Agatha Dorkish just like rip into Nick over lunch, which was crazy rude coming up there. And they seem to know everything. They're like, you have a club foot. Lucifer was in your brain. He broke out. You wrestled in your head. All of these things happened. We've watched the first two episodes of the show.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they were very mean. And honestly, Nick felt like he's becoming a bad boy. Bad boy? Like, we've joked about how Nick is a bad boy, but he's actually a very good boy.
Yeah.
And in this, he's actually more of a bad boy. He's like not nice. He's prone to rage. It's something. I love his line. You two skanks can go to heaven. I thought that was.
I'm going to start using that in everyday life.
Yeah,
you're absolutely right. Though he is lashing out. They blame it on PTSD later, and that makes a lot of sense. And I like that. I like that they're not just resetting for his character after everything that he went through. That would be hard for him, and he makes some bad decisions by the end. And reacts to things in a very poor way, but it does follow up on what he has gone through, and I like that.
Yeah, agreed.
So back to Ambrose, he finds Herod's crown, and Herod's crown, in fact, is in none other than the town of Riverdale.
Yes, that's very fun. And it makes sense because he's like, there's a cursed item in Riverdale, and I think there's a lot of cursed items in Riverdale. You like the Jughead's typewriter, Archie, the person.
Betty's scrunchie.
Yeah, a lot of cursed items.
This is the way they go about this, though, is so fascinating to me because they establish that Herod's crown is in Riverdale. It was discovered by Benjamin Blossom in Hitler's bunker. He took it back to Riverdale, was, of course, murdered in Riverdale. And then they take something called the Immoral Compass, which detects evil. And they find it on the Blossom Maple Farm in Riverdale. But before, the big crossover item is they pass by the Riverdale sign, and you get a reverse of it, and it says Murder Capital of the World, and also tagged as JJ was here, clearly talking about Jellybean Jones.
Oh, interesting.
No, it's Jughead Jones.
J. Jonah Jameson from Spider-Man.
J. Jonah Jameson. But the thing that's so funny to me is that like the crossover item is the Riverdale sign. And then they go into the woods, clearly on the Blossom grounds where they have their maple farm, but that's fine. But it isn't like you're like, oh man, where are they going to go? Are they going to go to Pops? Are they going to go to Riverdale High? Are they going to go to the Pembroke? Which location? No, they're going to go to a tree.
Well, that's why I thought we would get to see one character. Like when they said it's in Riverdale, really leaned in, really like excited to see what was going to happen. I thought we'd get to see one character. But I guess the only actor they were able to book was the sign.
Yes. I spent that entire scene. I almost couldn't concentrate on that scene because I was like, oh, all right, okay. When is Cheryl Blossom going to walk up and be like, what the hell are you doing here? And then they run off. Why? I assume it comes down to money and schedules, right? Like that has to be the reason they can't do something like that.
Yes. But also if they did that, that would overtake too much of the story here. So sure. I respect the move. It's setting up and teasing the idea that they could do this at any moment on either of these shows, and they do just the lightest version of it here, and it's just giving us a little taste of that precious crossover, and they're going to give us more as the season goes on.
I also do love the detail. We spent a lot of time earlier this episode talking about how if you brought magic onto Riverdale, it would destroy that reality, except you have the Blossom Farm. In season one, they had the whole creepy maple tapping ceremony that the Blossom family did. There was just a corpse in one of those trees, just hanging out there with a crown the entire time.
That's where you get the extra flavor. Corpse.
Yeah. So they do. They get there. Dorian, we get a quick shot of Dorian giving a drink. Dorian Gray, this is the actual Dorian Gray from Portrait of Dorian Gray. He runs a bar in Greendale. He gives a drink to Nick. And then it's back to Ambrose, who pulls a crown out of the tree.
Very gross tree.
Very gross crown. And then stupidest decision of the episode, I have to say. Sabrina's like, great, let me take that back to hell so I can get that unholy regalia there and finish the first part of the challenge. And Ambrose says, hold on a second. I could use the power of this crown to rejuvenate the coven. And Sabrina says, no problem. I'm going to leave you alone with this crown and then go off and do something else. And then we'll just bring it down to hell later.
Yeah. This is, again, a symptom of her, like, being too busy, where it's hard to rank the importance of things. Mm-hmm. But Ambrose even says, like, why don't you go to the carnival? You know, the fucked up carnival in town that's going to ruin everyone's lives. Go check that out. I'm going to go do some weird magic, some, like, very, like, time-focused science magic on this crown.
Yes. So meanwhile, Herod, who is a horrible corpse, breaks out of the tree coming after his crown. We get a quick scene where Sabrina goes back to school. She's wondering where Nick is. It turns out Nick is trying to cut off his own foot, but he can't.
Very bad boy. Very bad boy move.
Yes. Classic bad boy move. Bad boy is always cutting off their own feet. Nick thinks Lucifer is still inside of him, but Sabrina comforts him and is like, let's go to that fucked up carnival. That'll calm
she's
you
like,
down.
Let's fill your head with good things, like a fucked up carnival.
Yeah.
We saw Melvin also.
Oh, we did.
Don't trust Melvin.
You don't trust Melvin?
No. Melvin he's not a secret keeper. Melvin, he'll stab you in the back.
Oh, okay. Is Melvin the new bad boy of the show?
Wow. I hadn't thought of that. Jeez, now do I have to be a Melvin fan?
Yeah. I'm a Melsbeth shipper, so.
Let's see. Melvin. Oh, it works.
Yeah, it does work really well. So then we get back to Ambrose. He's studying the crown. It's got a lot of power. He's very excited because it is going to help the Cole Coven and bring all their power back. And unfortunately, Herod attacks, takes the crown back, and the crown, he says, crown, who took you originally? I don't care about this guy on the floor. And the crowd's like, Sabrina took me.
Yeah, there's a lot of crazy choices in this scene. First off, that dead dude is juicy.
Yes.
Juicy. And it's very funny. He's like, what's that maple syrup smell? Nice. And then the crown doesn't really fit him, which I thought was weird. He just like squeezes it down. How do you fit a crown? If you're a king taking over after a devastating battle in England, like from the 16th century, are you like, ah, shit, I have sort of a tiny head? Can you?
To be fair, he has been soaking in maple sap for probably almost 100 years at this point. So he's probably pretty bloated.
Yeah, you think
so? And the black stuff oozing out of him probably isn't blood. It's probably congealed and condensed maple sap. So it's actually maple syrup. So I would say if you took Herod and rubbed him on some pancakes, real good.
Yum. Rub. I love rubbing stuff on my food. Yeah, I guess. Too much sugar, though. I'm more of a savory. I like my monsters savory, not sweet. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. So you would like if there was like King Herod had died in a salt factory.
Or like an everything bagel seasoning factory.
Mm. I was going to say a salt factory because then you could use Mortons.
Cool. Very badass salt.
Yes. So over to Professor Carcosa's carnival, the dilapidated, terrible looking carnival where it looks like the rides are going to fall apart at any second. They get there. There's a carnival barker there. Roz looks at him. Now, we didn't mention this earlier, but Roz has a psychic ability called the cunning that it gives her sight. And she sees the carnival barker as some sort of pan satyr type figure. But it's like, no big deal. Don't worry about it. Let's just keep going into this fucked up carnival.
Well, let me say real quick, there's a little bit of research I did here. The Ooh, barker yes. is reciting a poem when he enters. And that poem is from a book called The Circus of Dr. Lau by Charles Ooh. Finney from 1935. And it's sort of an interesting connection. So that story, you might be surprised by this, is about a town where a fucked up circus shows up.
Oh, okay.
So that's there's a metaphor okay. in there. There's a
I
metaphor
don't really,
in there.
I don't really see the connection there, but thank okay. you for bringing up the information.
That's just that's the research. I'm the Ambrose of this podcast in so many ways, and okay. That's just one way.
There we go. So yeah, they go into the carnival. We mentioned a bunch of other things that happened at the carnival, but we get back to Nick and Sabrina. Nick is really grating at Sabrina in this scene. He's pissed off that she took over as Queen of Hell because the whole reason he went to Hell in the first place was so that she wouldn't become Queen of Hell.
Yeah.
And is like, did you make your daddy so happy? And Sabrina's like, don't worry about it. Let's just go into this tunnel of love. And I loved this shot Like the shot where they go into the tunnel of love and it just kind of holds steady with it. And you hear a scream and then they run out of the tunnel of love followed by Herod. It was just such a fun way of staging the whole thing.
Yeah, I was surprised. I would expect we were going to go into the tunnel of love and have a big sort of scary reveal there. But I actually really liked that you just were like, nah, let's just do it because we want to get to the fight. And see it in this sort of weird way. I also thought it was funny. Sabrina's whole reason to take Nick to this carnival, fucked up carnival, was to be like, let's take a break so you can recover. And then 10 seconds they're there and she's like, what exactly was the traumatic psychological situation like while you were had the devil inside of you? So she instantly triggers him.
She can't help herself. Yeah. She is all in. She just does whatever she wants at all points, and it doesn't worry about the consequences. And it's curious to me. I wonder if she's ever going to see some comeuppance there. You know, is it ever going to blow back on her in any way?
Well, I don't know. It feels like that's almost her secret power.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's, I mean, we're going to get to there in a second. That sort of wins her, is a win at the end of this episode for her.
That's true. So let's get to that. Herod attacks. They have a sweet ass fight, a magic fight, which was a lot of fun between Nick, Sabrina, and Herod. She very briefly tells some passerbys, oh, don't worry, it's all part of the show, and shuts them in there. In the middle of the fight, the crown pops off of Herod. Caliban bloops in, grabs the crown, and disappears, which you had to see coming at that point.
Yeah, what a jerk. He doesn't respect the game.
Yeah, he respects the player a little bit, it feels like. But
indeed.
Maybe not the game.
Yeah.
And once the crown is gone and Herod has lost his power, Ambrose comes in, blasts him to pieces, and again, another fun shot where Nick and Sabrina are covered in blood and guts. They run out of there.
And syrup.
And Ambrose says, don't worry, I'll clean up the mess. You just get a shot of him, like, dragging the carnival worker who got killed by Herod very slowly. Just some fun bits of direction there. Just like hanging a little too long on these scenes.
Yeah. And what a workaday thing it is for Ambrose to be like, oh, here we go again. Hide the old body.
It's great. So Nick heads back to the academy, or says he's going to head back to the academy. Sabrina is a little put off by that. He's not going to stay with her anymore. Yes, Justin.
It's interesting that he is very specifically putting some distance between himself and Sabrina here. And Sabrina even calls it out. He calls her Spellman for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like a sort of a pushback from their relationship. I feel like Spellman is what he called her when they were first getting to know each other a little bit and they were a little more rivaly. So I don't know. It feels like a big step back, especially in relation to the next scene that we get.
Well, I think part of that is the PTSD, as they call out. Like, certainly that's part of it. But also the fact that he made the ultimate sacrifice for her, and even if she saw it as going down to hell to save him, he, I think, saw it rightly as a slap in the face. That, like, he made this huge save the world gesture, and she immediately negated it.
Yeah, and so I think he is dealing with the pain that's caused him, and he doesn't get any reward, basically, from it.
Now, as you teased, he heads to Dorian's instead of the academy, says, I would like a couple of those playmates that you offered me earlier. They ask him what he wants. What's your pleasure? And he says pain. He clearly wants to hurt himself. He also, we should mention, reveals that he is jealous of Caliban. Like, he kind of throws that in there. He's like, oh, you just have another playmate. You have the sexy clay man. Different than sexy clay man, who's the comic book artist. Again, I want to specify.
Very clear. Hashtag clay man is sexy.
Yeah, sexy clay man. And the other thing that stuck out to me, that's such a dumb thing to stick out to me, but he's drinking an entire bottle of absinthe.
Very strong choice.
Oh, my God. That's going to kill him. Like, I understand he's a witch.
His breath is going to be so licorice-y.
Mm-hmm.
Gross.
You're going to smell it on him. He's going to smell like a good and plenty everywhere he goes.
Oh, but he's a bad and plenty. He's a bad and plenty.
So then we go back to hell. We get a little bit of wrap up here. Caliban puts on the crown and says, it looks good on me. Sabrina slaps him twice during their conversation. And after she slaps him twice and says the contest isn't over, The Lords of Hell chant Sabrina, Sabrina, Sabrina.
I actually think they say Sabrina, oh, Sabrina, which I was like, what's a weird pronunciation?
That's the thing about hell, man. They hit the wrong syllables or syllables, yeah. If you will.
Oh, 100%. And it's frustrating. That's my hell. Hell is other pronunciations.
Yes. Two questions off of this that I have. The first one about the Lords chanting Sabrina's name. What do you think about that? That was a surprising turn. Like, was that just because she stood up to Caliban or what?
To me, it was about showing that she is getting comfortable in her role as Queen of Hell, and maybe we'll start to like it, and mm-hmm. we'll start to sort of enjoy this darker path that she always has the potential of walking.
And then the other thing on the other side that I wanted to bring up is she calls out Caliban and says, why didn't you help us with Herod? And Caliban says, why would I help you? I was trying to win this game. And it's a little crazy that she doesn't understand that.
Yeah, I think that points to like her innocence and also just the back on the way that Lilith was like, it's going to be 2 out of 3. It's sort of like, no, I'm not going to help you. I'm fighting you.
Right.
It's like a constant realignment of like, right, that's what's happening here.
Yeah.
But let me ask you this. Do you think she will get together with Caliban at any point this season?
I don't know. I feel like we have a lot of steps to get there. Certainly, she's not going to be happy if she finds out that Nick has been fooling around with other people at Dorian's. So I think we're headed to something there. Certainly, I think Caliban already has designs on Sabrina. That's been pretty clear from the beach scene right up. But I don't know if Sabrina is there with Caliban necessarily.
Yeah.
What do you think?
It feels like it might happen.
Yeah.
I can definitely see
it be the sort of thing where it's like a fight, 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 pause,
kiss,
smooch. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, God, what have we done? Runaway type thing.
Yeah.
Man, I don't know. Sexy Mud Man, what can I say? And then we get one last scene back to the creepy carnival. All the carnival people are there. They all meet. They call out various members of the community that they've targeted, that they think are going to work well for their plan. Uh-huh. Robin is there, too.
Oof. Good. I mean, devastating reveal, but really well done for the writers of this episode. Like, really got me with that, like, oh, man, I trusted you, dude.
Yeah, well, because we love Theo so much and we want Theo to be so happy.
The thing that gets me the most when characters are just like trying really hard and being very pure of heart, and Theo was, and I thought he was going to be rewarded for it, instead, betrayed.
Yes. So Robin is there. They plant a seed and do a sacrifice, spill some blood on the seed, and start praying to the gods of old. And this is what Father Blackwood was warning about over the past episode, and we got a little tease of in the first episode, that the old ones are coming. They're praying to the old ones, the gods of old. So we're going to see how that turns out, but that certainly seems to mean big, bad things for Greendale going forward.
I don't know. They're just planting a little garden.
And oh, okay.
They're just watering the flower with blood.
Right.
I think that's a great way to get protein in the soil, and maybe they're just going to have a beautiful squash, a green one squash.
Yeah. Whether it's blood on flowers or maple syrup infused zombies in trees early in the episode, great episode for plants.
Great. Plants are winning.
Ooh, ooh. All right. Before we wrap up here, let's talk about which witch reigns supreme in this episode. Justin, which witch reigns supreme?
Ooh, that is a tough one. I'm going to throw it out to Ambrose in this one. I feel like he's given a lot of opportunity here. He just had a successful quest resolved, and now he's back and he's working on magical objects. He's been getting involved in the school. He's got a lot of potential for this season.
I'm going to call out Nick, actually. You know, I don't agree with all of his choices in this episode, but his plot line was the most emotionally powerful plotline in the episode, and he made some big moves throughout here. I'm really curious to see what's going to go on with him going forward. And listen, him reclaiming or claiming for the first time that bad boy status is what I want to see out of Nick Scratch.
It was good. And of course, special shout out to the new bad boy on the block, Melvin.
If you'd like to support our podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. at the People's Improv Theater Loft in New York. Come on by and we will chat with you about Sabrina. We don't have dedicated Sabrina channels, but if you want to check us out socially, Riverdale Dark on Twitter, Riverdale After on Instagram, Riverdale After Dark on Facebook, iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice. If you want to subscribe, and please do comment on iTunes in particular. That helps us out quite a bit on the Chilling Podcast of Sabrina feeds. Also, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and more. And we'll see you next time, which is...
Toss me a couple of brews for my witch hat.